America Trends Podcast is part of the MHNR Network. MHNRnetwork.com.
What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to America Trends. I'm Larry Rifkin. The terms cancel culture and woke are tossed around in the yawning divide politically and culturally today in America. Do you know if you have ever canceled anyone, or whether you're woke or asleep in the modern vernacular? I had a spirited conversation with a retired ethics professor about these terms and how they're used in our culture, and whether one side or another is appropriating them just for their own advantage. If it's all escaped you to this point, perhaps in this podcast and the back and forth conversation we have, we can help to make it all clearer today on America Trends.
With us on America Trends is Dr. Stephen Mintz. He's the author of Beyond Happiness and Meaning, Transforming Your Life Through Ethical Behavior. And he also has taught for many years at different universities. He's somebody who has been sought out by many media organizations to talk about things that relate to social responsibility on the corporate side and many other ethical issues. So we are bringing him to America Trends today to talk about something that, well, Professor, I think a lot of people talk about, but I'm reading that a poll suggests that a lot of voters currently don't even know what cancel culture is, and yet the debate rages on. So let's start with the definition.
Yeah, but it's different ways of defining it. I think one thing to start off is to note that it's sort of an extension of political correctness. That's how this movement started, with respect to if you say things that aren't accepted or acceptable to a majority of people, then you could be called out for your views simply because they disagree. The cancel culture takes that one step further and not only calls you out, but attempts to isolate you from your community, basically to get you shunned for having points of view that are different than the prevailing political correctness. So it's an extension. It's a little bit more severe. It tends to stifle free speech.
Now, Tom Zimmer is a historian at Georgetown University. He's writing a book on political divides in America. You may have read that we have a little bit of a division in America.
Yeah.
And he says that calling something PC, let's go back to the progenitor of the notion of canceling, calling something PC was an attempt to discredit the claims of traditionally marginalized groups for respect. Do you agree with that?
Well, I would say yes, it started with that, and I think it still grew from all of that, and political correctness is, in my mind, it's pretty much anybody now who has a point of view that differs from prevailing point of view. One of the things I like to equate it to is this so-called woke culture phenomenon, which is basically an awareness of politically correct positions or social justice related positions, and if you're not aware of them or you don't adopt the prevailing point of view, this could lead to being canceled.
But there's so many different ways that we cancel people in our culture today.
Sure.
And I think there are some that are much more nefarious than others. So let me take, for example, I know you talked about in some of the materials that I read about, for example, Mike Pence, and Mike Pence being looked upon unfavorably by the employees of a particular publisher because of some views that he has held in the past as governor in particular of Indiana about gay rights. And while you say he might have been canceled as a result of that, I mean, he is still out there to speak. He can go to another publisher. There are so many available to him. So why is that the right? Because the First Amendment, I think people get wrong. It's not about the fact that I can cancel you as a friend if I don't like you and not talk to you again, or a private company can decide that its policies don't involve you for one reason or another, but that in fact that's about our relation to the government in terms of the freedom to speak. So why is that an idea or an example that you put forward?
Yeah, it was put forward in reference to a lot of pressure on the publisher of his book, Simon Schuster, and a lot of people wanting them to cancel the book deal with Mike Pence because of the views you alluded to.
Right.
Now, to their credit, they ultimately did not do that. They ultimately decided it's free speech. They're not going to censor his speech. So it was an attempt by a group of people to cancel him, but in fact, he wasn't canceled for those ideas, although he might be in other forums, but he wasn't in this case.
Right. But those forums do exist, and
oh, sure.
Everyone has that right. For example, I interviewed Stanley Fish, who is a real scholar of the First Amendment, and he was canceled, if you will, at a university. I believe it was Seton Hall. They didn't want him to speak. And in his book, he talks about it and says, that's okay. They can do that. That's their right. If, in fact, they don't want me, I'll go to another university or I'll go up on YouTube. We have so many platforms today to express ourselves. And, of course, we have networks that cancel individuals. Fox cancels liberals and CNN may at times cancel conservatives, though I don't think conservatives even want to come on CNN or MSNBC many times. I've not seen Mitch McConnell on, and I'm sure they've invited him many times. So we have a lot of people self-canceling themselves because of where they want to be seen and heard.
Right. They certainly have the right to choose what forum they're going to be interviewed, and who can blame them? Everything is so divisive in the country. Certainly a liberal knows if they go on a conservative TV, they're going to have a lot of backlash and vice versa. So sure, we all have a right to speak in whatever form we want to. But the question is, should a person have to decide that he or she will not speak in a particular forum because a group is taking offense to them? For example, with people invited to be commencement speakers at universities and then being canceled because some group of students don't like the message. Seems to me it is a restriction on political free speech or any type of free speech, and that's not healthy for society. I do agree that cancel culture has some benefits with respect to holding people accountable because their views may be offensive and they need to be pointed out. And a glaring example of that is with Harvey Weinstein and Bill Cosby. I think those are two examples most people will agree being canceled was a good thing.
Yeah, I had a cultural anthropologist on recently, and he talks about the lack of virtue in our society. You're an ethicist, so help us to understand this. He feels, for example, that we don't sanction enough behavior in our culture, which is anything but virtuous, and we need to hold people to account. So, for example, I mean, if, again, somebody is hiding behind what they call, you know, an attack on the woke, if you will. But they're hiding behind it because it's another form of backlash against African Americans or other dispossessed groups in our society. Why shouldn't they be called out for what the behavior does? For example, some of the new laws that states are putting on the books to restrict and suppress the vote. Why isn't that necessarily appropriate to call these folks out and say that is reminiscent of Jim Crow?
Yeah, I think it certainly have a right to do that on any political issue. But I think what's missing is the opportunity to dialogue with both sides on these issues because we tend to talk above each other rather than to each other. So I think cancel culture would be very healthy if it led to an open debate about these issues. Why is it offensive to one group rather than just a bland, you know, a blanket cancel culture? You don't like my point of view, it's going to be canceled. That's, I think, it's stifling free speech And as a professor, I'm very worried about that. We do this with students, and we don't discuss these issues openly in the classroom, because we could be canceled for just discussing an issue that is against the prevailing point of view. So I think that's where we're missing, and where the cancel culture goes just too far, a bridge too far.
No, I understand what you're talking about, speech on certain levels in certain places. But having said that, when I look at it, I'm much more concerned about, let's go back to 2013, whatever it may be, and Donald Trump trying to cancel Barack Obama by suggesting falsely, with no proof, that he came from Kenya, or canceling Joe Biden, trying to cancel out the fact that he won the Electoral College convincingly and 7 million more votes, and trying to insurrect. I'm much more concerned about behavior that's trying to cancel the majority than I am about somebody not being able to speak at a commencement.
Yeah, I think those are extreme cases when you use Trump. His behavior is extreme in what he's trying to do.
Yeah, but we have a whole party that's following that credo today, and they're the same party trying to tell the rest of us that this woke culture, I'm glad some of us are waking up to past injustice at this moment in time, that we're the ones who should stifle it and give them the platform to cancel us.
Yeah. Well, I'm not a supporter of Trump or any of those who adopt his point of view, whether when he was president or now. So I think, there's a situation where behavior should be canceled for the good of society. That's why companies like Facebook and Twitter took away his social media, because it was so egregious that it was behavior society should not even be subject to, because it's dangerous, as we learned on January 6th.
What do you think? I mean, you mentioned about social media, but it's really interesting because I just interviewed the head of the polarization lab at Duke University, and I know what you said earlier about talking to each other. But unfortunately, Dr. Mintz, I think we're past that at this moment. Yep. We've got to find a way back. It's not like going forward doing the same things we're doing is going to do any of that. And he has some surprising research. When they threw some bots at different people who had online identified themselves as either very liberal or very conservative, and you would think that maybe by offering this material that countervailed their own thinking and their own prejudices, that it might open them up to new ideas. It did just the opposite. It hardened them. So yeah. I know, we're all wishing and hoping that we can do something to make ourselves more accessible to each other, but it's not happening.
No, it's not happening because, in my opinion, we don't have leaders who are presenting that kind of behavior. Instead, we have leaders who are dividing the country. So any political issue, just about anyone you deal with, you're going to have a split country. You're going to have 50 Republicans, 50 Democrats, and nobody's going to move the needle very much. So there's no role model. There's no examples in society of people getting together, dialoguing on issues, and maybe even changing opinions. Much to the contrary, the opinions get hardened. And I think that's part of the problem. We don't see how it could be done successfully, because it isn't done successfully. So as you say, quite correctly, to expect any different result is unlikely. We're just going to go on this way until and unless somebody breaks through on this discussion. As a college professor, I'd hope professors would have a key role to play in at least emulating that kind of behavior in the classroom.
But let me ask you, how do you fight back against irrationality? I mean, total bunk. I mean, when we hear people who will not swear off someone like Marjorie Taylor Greene and believing that a Satan-worshipping pedophile ring has taken over American government, or that it's okay to overturn the results of a free and fair election, one that went to 60 court cases, including the U.S. Supreme Court, which is by any measure a conservative court today, or an insurrection at the Capitol. How do you have a civil conversation?
Yeah, it's very difficult. Again, I think these are extreme views. They're views, and they've occurred. We all know that. And it's hard to fight back when somebody doesn't care whether what they say is true or not. And that's the situation you're describing here. It's not only fake news, it's misleading news, it's dangerous news. And against that, it's very difficult to fight back because the supporters of those kinds of views, they're just so locked in and so closed off to any kind of dialogue. We have no way of opening it up. You just have to deal with it as best as possible. And Facebook and Twitter dealt with it by canceling them, which I think was a good thing, especially given what had happened on January 6th.
So when is it right to cancel or not right to cancel in your mind? For example, I mean, you said that we don't have any political leaders trying to deal with this, but I've got to give President Biden some credit. I mean, he came in saying, look, let's try to work together on some things. Let's get things done. And Mitch McConnell, of course, said, no, we're not going to. In fact, our goal is to make sure that we win in 2022 and that none of your ideas get put into law, regardless of whether they're good, bad, or indifferent. So the question is, I mean, if Joe Biden, who's probably trying to toe the middle line as best as anyone has in the recent memory in America, if he can't get anyone to listen and they want to cancel him, I mean, Kevin McCarthy came out of a meeting after, you know, the president invited him into the Oval Office. They evidently had a very civil conversation. And then he put out a fundraising appeal saying, you know, we're going to blast the president and, you know, his lying and this, that, and the other. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just indicative of how far we've gone in this country toward division, and it's very difficult to overcome that. I think there's just no way that one side is going to listen to the other side in the current political climate. It's just us against them. Now, maybe this is on steroids now because of Trump and all the division. I think that's real possible. Mm-hmm. But it probably started even before that. Maybe with President Obama and people trying to cancel him for anything and everything. So it's our culture now. It's what America is all about. It's a lack of civility, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, and as an ethicist and somebody who has written about things like transforming your life through ethical behavior, you must be shocked at what you've seen in the recent period.
Right. Well, I certainly am. There's enough examples of people who have acted unethically. And in my book, I talk about those people, try to point out why they were unethical. You mentioned earlier virtue. I'm a big believer of virtue ethics, which is character-based, that we should be looking at people's character as much as even their opinions. And good people, you know, they're honest, they're trustworthy, they're kind, they're empathetic, and we can go through all the virtues. And to me, that's a much better ethical way of looking at things than traditional philosophical reasoning that might say this is wrong, this is right, and there's, you know, no gray area. It's one or the other. So, in my book, I just try to use examples like the cancel culture of how far we've gone with the divide in ethics and society. I always like to talk to my students about when did this get started, this cancel culture. And I don't know that everyone would agree with me, but I think it started when Colin Kaepernick, I'm sure you know, the 49er quarterback, kneeled down, lost his job. Nobody would hire him, even though he was a decent quarterback. So to this day, the guy can't get hired. Now, back then, what he did may have been more politically charged. Over time, we have accepted it as an expression of free speech, if you will. And then, of course, we've had in recent past hashtag Black Lives Matter, hashtag Me Too, and these movements that are very positive movements, but also lead to cancel culture as well if you don't believe in them, if you take a different point of view, which is fine. We should have that open debate. But, you know, they're not healthy points of view to not adopt things like social justice or sexually fair treatment of women.
Well, I want to get into that just a moment, because before I broaden the topic a little bit, and I worry a little bit that you may be playing into a game that's going on the right. Seth Kotler, an American history scholar at Willamette University in Salem, Oregon, put it this way. anti-wokeism isn't a response to anything new happening on the left so much as it is a continuation of a very old politics of reactionary backlash, especially white backlash. In other words, just by using the terms woke and cancel culture, if you don't use it to really call out those trying to cancel democracy, cancel free and fair elections, then you're really playing into what the right has been doing over the many years with different ways that they have assailed progress that's been made on civil rights and always pushed back.
No, I agree with you on that issue, especially that some of the policies and laws being adopted at the state level are dangerous, and they do tend to close off free speech, voting rights, and individuals having a right, indeed, to be able to vote on elections in different ways, different forums, different ways of casting a ballot. I am against that. I think that's very dangerous, and I think it's kind of a reactionary. I agree with that. We're going back to old days rather than moving forward. We should be making voting easier to get more people involved in the American example and what's going on here, not making it harder. And that's the problem with all of these laws. They tend to make it harder. And they, in a sense, they try to cancel people.
When I wore a shirt during the campaign about getting out to vote, that was looked upon as a political signal. When did voting, I'm trying to encourage the largest number of people, all you hear is get out the vote, get out and vote. And when did that become a message to many in various circles suggesting that, oh, man, what are you trying to do here? You're trying to awaken a slumbering beast because they're the wrong voters. We don't want them going out.
Right, exactly what you just said, and we do associate it with Trump and his supporters because getting out the vote or preventing getting out the vote presumably meant you were trying to keep away people who supported others than Trump who supported Biden, and you want to close off the vote to make that less likely. That's not healthy toward democracy, and that's not something I would ever support. But you know, we went through 4 years of turmoil in this country with a president we've never seen before who has said and done things that we've never experienced before and has created such a division to an extreme that you have things like January 6th occurring. And we need to somehow get back to a balance. I believe and I agree with you that President Biden is a good person to bring that along. He's basically a moderate. And he is trying to bring us together, but he can't do it alone. You have to have Republicans willing to go against the party from time to time on votes, whether it's infrastructure or any other vote, rather than just saying no simply because the other party has opposed it, which is what's going on now.
Okay, before I brighten the lens and widen the aperture, let me ask you this one final question on these points that we're talking about, and that is, why has the Republican Party canceled Donald Trump? I mean, there are some Republicans like Liz Cheney, and we saw that she got canceled for doing that, and we see others like Adam Kinzinger and so forth, but why has he not been canceled for actions that are outrageous, that are seditious, that are, trying to foment violence and insurrection? Why has he not been canceled?
Well, I guess, of course, people are afraid of him. They're afraid of what he might say and what he might do because we've seen the extremes of his behavior. They don't want to get on the bad side of Trump. They see what happens.
Who cares? I mean, why do I want to be on the good side, or why do I want to play to a base of people who are base when I see what was represented at the Capitol? Why do I want them? Why don't I want to expand the party into a different realm? I mean, to me, that is accepting the lowest standard we can, which is simply a coarse desire for election among a small, really bigoted base. I don't understand it, and I never will. So we can move on. But let me ask you, you've written that cancel culture is alive and well in the workplace. Now, I'd like to pursue this because I don't really understand exactly what that means. In other words, if I don't hire you to start with, then I'm canceling you. If I don't promote you, or if there are unfair labor practices, I'm canceling you. But we know there's been discrimination in the workplace for so many years. And if you look at who occupies, you know, the large offices and so forth, I mean, there's so many studies that show how difficult it is for many women and the minorities to get into high-ranking positions. So what's canceling in the workplace?
Well, I think we have to look at social media. It's contributed to an environment where companies can now monitor much of what their employees say and do around the clock, 24/7. So it allows them to identify statements or actions which can then be canceled by the employer. Mm-hmm. Maybe they don't support the Black Lives Matter movement, for example, and the employer is a big supporter. And because of social media and the access they have to employees, whether they're on the job or not, they have more of an opportunity to cancel the individual because they're adopting a point of view different than what the company thinks is right. I think mm-hmm. Facebook and Twitter do this. If you don't adopt their point of view as a company, then you could be canceled. You could lose your job in those companies if that's the case. So that's, I think, the danger of cancel culture in the workplace. Workplace has become more politicized over the last several years, and we see more of this going on.
But what about the practices that have excluded people from that workplace to begin with, or not given them advancement, thus canceling their opportunity for advancement again? I mean, aren't those more compelling than talking about somebody on social media saying, I'm not a supporter of BLM, and you know, somebody bringing them into the office and saying, hey, tone that down, or look, that's not really what we want to hear because we think there are values that we ascribe to in that movement. Regardless, I mean, they're a private company, but they don't have the right to discriminate on the basis of sex or race or whatever it may be. And yet historically, we've seen a lot of that. I mean, do you think that there's some balance or equilibrium here about what's worse in terms of the cancel culture?
Well, I think they have the right to discriminate because of their cancel culture point of view. Mm-hmm. Free speech in private companies is not the same as free speech in government, where
right.
government censorship is, you know, obviously not acceptable. So they have the right to do that. They don't have the right to discriminate based on race or sex, as you pointed out, but they do based on ideas if they want to. And because everything has become more politicized, even in the workplace, this is what happens. Everything we do in society is judged by these standards. Whether it's the cancel culture, wokeism, or whatever, and it's infected all society, and it's a shame it's gone into the workplace, but that's where we're at right now.
Okay, but again, I get back to the idea. I mean, you don't ascribe it only to the left. I mean, ascribe it to the right, but I'm telling you that it's been appropriated, cancel culture and wokeism, by the right, and using it again for the typical backlash that has taken on many different names and forms over the years. So this is now really part of their card. I mean, if you look at it, Marjorie Taylor Greene, okay, can we both agree that she is a real character and a real problem because of her views? They're detestable. And she wrote a fundraising letter that said, canceling religious freedom through the so-called Equality Act, canceling election security in H.R. 1, canceling gender, canceling our sovereignty, canceling our Second Amendment rights after we've had, you know, endless shootings and there's been nothing done about guns, defunding the police. Well, that didn't get a cancel. It got a defunding. But,
yeah.
I mean, do you see where the right has appropriated this term? And I know you mean to talk to all of us as an ethicist
right.
about this tendency. But again, I've got to caution you. I think playing into someone else's hand here.
Well, I see what you're saying, and the example you gave is an extreme example, and I agree with you that that's not something we should aspire to. And yes, the Republicans more than the Democrats, the conservatives more than liberals, have turned to the cancel culture to stifle free speech or to promote their points of view. I agree with that. Maybe they feel that this is the way they need to be heard. I don't know if that's their motivation. But yeah, I mean, as an ethicist, as you said, I try to be balanced, at least I do in the classroom, and give students both sides of the issue and let them decide for themselves. That's what college education is all about. Here's the facts, you decide. But yeah, I think Republicans are more guilty of it, and certainly in extreme cases, as we talked about before. And it needs to be recognized and dealt with society. Whether that's going to happen or not, I don't know.
You ask, should an individual be judged by their worst act or on a totality of their behavior? And I think this is a great ethical decision or ethical question to plumb. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, and I'll give you one example, of course. My last name is Rifkin, and, well, I'm not going to get into Joel Rifkin, the serial killer. When I've interviewed a guy who wrote books about serial killers, he would always bring that up. Any relation? No, we are not, as best I know. But the latest movie by Woody Allen is called Rifkin's Festival. Now, I doubt there are 2% of the people in America who even know that. But everybody knows Woody Allen's movies, Annie Hall, and a myriad of incredible films over the years. Now, in a sense, he has been canceled because of his behavior toward Dylan Farrow. And so I'm wondering how, if you would even use Woody Allen as an example, I think a lot of people question, gee, do I feel guilty going back and watching Manhattan or watching any of the, you know, movies that he put out? He's put out probably 60, 70 films. Help us with that.
Yeah, well, what I meant to say with should a person be judged by their worst act was in the context of somebody who is otherwise a good person, who seems balanced and so on. But maybe when they were younger, they did or said something that in retrospect was now considered to be offensive. Maybe it wasn't at the time, but it certainly is, and we understand that. One example given is a lot of these politicians and others who, because of social media, were caught in blackface, that sort of thing, an act that maybe at the time did not seem so egregious, which obviously it is, and now, 20 or 30 years later, somebody dug it up, and they want to cancel that individual and their whole life's work. And that's what I was getting at, that people do good things and they do bad things, and they have to be balanced. I think a good example of that is Michael Milken, I think is his last name. He was during the financial crisis. He was a guy who, cheated, basically stole from clients, went to jail. And then when he got out, he's starting all sorts of charities to promote cancer treatment and research. And most people consider him to be a positive role model now. Should we cancel him because of what he did 20, 30 years ago? People can change. People can become more sensitive to issues they weren't during their earlier years. And I wouldn't want to be judged by my worst act. I'd want to be judged on balance, the acts that I've taken over the years, and what's my character as an individual. So that's what I was trying to get at in that statement you read.
Let's go back to Woody Allen. If, in fact, I mean, this was the one time that he did something untoward in this way, though, again, a lot of people have found a lot of, aspects of his film demonstrating his interest in young women. So, but the question is, if he did this one thing, in what way can you avoid in the culture that we're in today, where we now look at things that we didn't look at in the past as being totally objectionable and disqualifying for one reason or another, but we do today because we've changed. I mean, thankfully, we continue to evolve, we hope. Just as we thought slavery was okay at one time, or some did, today that's looked upon as heinous, thankfully. So my question is, how does one get back into the fold, if you will? Does one admit it, what you did, attempt to make amends like Michael Milken with a lot of his charitable work? What do you do
to try to get reinstatement. I know this has happened, I think, to Al Franken, too.
Yeah, yeah. No, you hit the nail on the head when you said admit it. I think that's step one. You have to come out and admit what you did or what you said back then was wrong. You realize it now. And how you're going to sort of make amends with respect to your position now. And, you know, promise not to do it again. Promise to be more sensitive to these issues that you may not have been years ago. But admitting it is the first step. And a lot of people, especially politicians, don't like to admit wrongdoing. And in the case of Woody Allen, that may be a different situation. But, you know, and it's also, did this person do these things more than once, more than twice? And if it's a pattern of behavior, that's something different. And then it's more justified to cancel that person out.
How do we find a certain balance here where there's respect for each other, but if you are acting out of the bounds of what society considers appropriate behavior for children, toward others who are less powerful than you, so on and so forth, that you are going to be reprimanded or you're going to be disapproved of or whatever. How do we find the right ethical balance?
It's kind of difficult. And one reason, I don't think there's a common agreement in society anymore as to what ethics are. I don't think people really know what ethics are. I think a lot of people think ethics or whatever I say it is. What I say is right and I say is wrong is ethical for me. And you can certainly look at it that way, but over time we have a lot of core values that make for an ethical society. You could go back to the golden rule after all. If you say treat others the way you want to be treated, who wants to be canceled? No one I know. So then you would look at the behavior of others from that lens and then just basic core values, being honest about situation, which obviously President Trump, the examples we talked about, were not very biased toward a point of view that wasn't supportable, was even fake. Being trustworthy as an individual, kindness and empathy, I think are important values. I think we have to talk about ethics before we resolve the cancel culture phenomenon, because it's also a part of civility in society. We no longer know how to disagree with each other without being disagreeable. And it just creates more division.
How much did institutional breakdown affect this? I mean, we know that the Catholic Church, which is supposed to be one of the most ethical, was allowing and covering up behavior that is vile and detestable and so disruptive of human life in their parishes that they destroy people. I know a man who actually was subject to that in Boston who killed himself ultimately after, you know, becoming an adult and having a great career and such, when all of this began to arise in the public consciousness, he killed himself. I mean, so many horrible things have gone on. Financial institutions that have ripped us off, Wells Fargo setting up accounts that we never asked for. I mean, nobody really being sent to jail after the 2008 economic collapse. Is it that we just don't hold people accountable enough? So we've lost our own compass as to what truly ethical behavior is.
Yeah, I think not holding people accountable enough is a big part of it, without a doubt. It just doesn't seem to happen. And then some people will say, I know some of my students will say to me, why should I do the right thing when I can do the wrong thing and benefit individually, as the example you've given show? And that, you know, that's a tough one. We need to hold people accountable for their actions. And that's why I think the cancel culture has some benefit in that respect. But we don't do that anymore as a society. Accountability, responsibility, trustworthiness, they're not core values we live to or aspire to anymore. It's a problem.
Help me to understand this. Recently, I've been doing some things around the house, and I've really been looking at different contractors and trying to work with the ones that I feel most comfortable with. And I've got to tell you, whether it's a Guatemalan immigrant who runs now a company of his own, or whether it's somebody doing my driveway, I mean, these were people that I looked at in the eye, and I could tell that they were ethical. I could tell they cared. I could tell that I could work with them, whether I had a contract or not. It could be with a handshake. It could be with a contract. And so there are so many good people in our society. And yet I really worry that our society isn't really as ethical as it should be, as a society, that we love the quick buck, we love the huckster, a la Donald Trump. I mean, that we really get taken in, and that we allow a lot of things that, in fact, we should call out for rebuke. So tell me, what am I seeing here?
Well, I think you've got your hand on it there, and I think we just don't, as a society, hold enough people accountable anymore. And I don't know what the answer is to that. We don't know how to speak to each other anymore. We don't really practice this, starting with grade school, where students are told what to think, how to feel. So it's a tough issue, and I don't know. I'm not optimistic about it all. I just don't think there are people out there to lead us down the right path, right now anyway.
But what about the things we value in our culture?
Yeah.
I mean, do we really value the right things? If money is really that which everyone is chasing, and any road will get you there, I mean, even if you don't have a map, because you can take the slow road, which many of us decide to take to be ethical, or you can take the fast, quick road and rip somebody else off. I mean, do you think our society is built on a moral fabric, on a moral foundation?
Not to the extent it should be or used to be. We're not judging things based on how we can improve things for ourselves and others. It's more of a self-interest, selfish point of view. How can we improve things for ourselves? And if somebody gets hurt along the way, so be it. And since we're not holding people accountable for their actions and words, people in society get the idea that this is acceptable behavior. This is okay to do. This is ethical. So I think social media is a big driver. You know, everybody wants to be an influencer. Well, why not be an influencer through your moral values, through your character, rather than because you promote something online or do a dance or whatever it is? And social media has really changed that a lot. And I don't think there's any turning back on that. We're not getting away from social media. But there's no message of good versus bad. There's very little discussed on social media or elsewhere about these core values. We need to get some people together who really are knowledgeable about it and discuss how far we've fallen, how much we've lost our moral compass as a society before it's too late.
Dr. Stephen Mintz, let me ask you in closing. There was a course taught at Harvard, and I know there's one at Yale now too, about happiness, and you've written the book Beyond Happiness, and I'm wondering whether an ethical life does connote a certain level of happiness. But I know it was a man, Ben Shahar, who taught the course at Harvard. I went to hear him, and we did a show for PBS with him. And Tal Ben Shahar, that was his name. And that was the most popular course at Harvard. I mean, we're all looking for happiness. Do you think that this society is a happy one? I've read these studies where Americans aren't that happy, as much as we like to tell ourselves that we're free and we're the best and we are exceptional. But many other societies are a lot happier than we are.
With regard to happiness, I agree with you. I don't think Americans are as happy as certainly they should be, given all that we're able to accomplish with hard work and so on. Maybe it's the societies. I think the societies that are most happy tend to be those that they share the resources more. There's more social balance, more economic balance. Scandinavian countries, for example, are well known for that. For me, happiness comes from being proud of things that I do and say, and have others being proud of me, want to emulate my behavior, or at least respect what I've done. And if it creates a personal cost to me to do the right thing, if I have to speak out against somebody who I think is doing the wrong thing and maybe it hurts me, in the end, I'll do it because I have a moral compass. And by being happier, it adds meaning to my life, more self-esteem. Others regard me as a good person. So that was the idea of the book. And things like the cancel culture and being sensitive to others kindness and empathy are themes that I play up in the book. I think are very important to bringing a sense of happiness, joy, commitment, but really fostering a better society for all, because I think that's what it's all about. We're all in the same boat, so we all need to sink or swim together.
Dr. Stephen Mintz, I want to thank you for being with us today. If you want to find his writings or his works, Stephen Mintz Ethics, all one word, .com. I thank you again for coming by on America Trends.
Thank you for having me today.